Lecture 16, The Intervention of France.
Our last lecture focused on Germany and the 30 Years' War during the first half of the 1630s. And in that last lecture, we looked at two parallel and in some respects ironic trends. The first of these was the gradual resolution of the disputes among the German member states themselves in any disputes that the princely states had with the Habsburg Emperor. The second trend that we looked at, running in a sense in contradiction to this, was the ever greater prominence in the 30 Years' War of the interests and indeed the intervention of foreign powers, in this case in particular France and Sweden. And the tension between these two trends, I think, is really best captured by the events of the year 1635. In which year the German powers managed to sign the Peace of Prague, resolving almost all disputes among the German member states themselves, and in a sense concluding the war as far as Germans were concerned. And at the same time, in the very same year, indeed at almost the same time of the year, the French themselves now enter the war openly by declaring war on Spain. In this lecture, I'd like to focus on the last phase of the war, a phase which is often called the Franco-Swedish phase of the war. It was, in terms of years, the longest phase of the 30 Years' War, and it was fairly clearly the most destructive. Ironically, however, due to the relative ideological simplicity of the war after about 1635, it usually gets the shortest treatment in most historical works, because, like I said, it's ideologically simple. But let's look then at first at this Franco-Swedish alliance. The two principals in this alliance, Cardinal Richelieu of France and Chancellor Oxenstierna of Sweden, were in many respects somewhat uneasy allies, since their priorities were really quite different. France had a long-standing rivalry with Spain, a rivalry which had gone back at least to the end of the 15th century, and therefore, from Richelieu's point of view, the main enemy in the war was Philip IV. France was primarily concerned with the areas around its own frontiers, eastern, what is now eastern France, northern Italy, and the Habsburg Netherlands. Sweden, on the other hand, had a completely different geographic focus. Sweden was interested in the north because it was primarily a Baltic power, and that made Austria, rather than Spain, the main enemy. Despite these strategic differences, however, France and Sweden soon learned that they would have to work together an awful lot more closely because each power had particular weaknesses that could only be remedied by the other. On the Swedish side of things, the Crown of Sweden was simply tiring of the war and didn't have the resources to continue much longer. The cost of the war, as was always the case in early modern Europe, was truly enormous, and the troops who fought it often fought with their wages many years in arrears. They fought for years without being paid. In the summer of 1635, in the month of August, the Swedish army in northern Germany mutinied. Actually, it's kind of interesting to call it the Swedish army because most of the troops themselves were actually ethnic Germans. But these troops mutinied, and they briefly actually managed to hold Chancellor Oxenstierna himself hostage. In this awkward and somewhat tense situation, Oxenstierna found himself forced to promise the troops that if the peace settlement didn't provide them sufficient payment of all their arrears, that the troops themselves might come to Sweden to collect them. And the prospect of hordes of angry, badly paid and well-armed mercenaries arriving in Sweden to collect wages, back wages, from the crown was an appalling prospect. And from this point onward, from the summer of 1635 onward, the crown of Sweden took up as one of its essential goals the so-called contentment of the soldiery, which is a kind of a euphemism for saying the problem of finding someone else to pay the bill of the soldiers' wages. Now, by contrast to Sweden with its massive fiscal problems, France had come into the conflict fairly fresh because from 1618 through about 1635, France had intervened largely on short-term occasions and had had a fairly passive role in the conflict. As a result of this, France comes into the 30 Years' War in 1635, fiscally speaking, relatively fresh and with considerable resources. The French weakness was, in a sense, the inverse of the Swedish weakness. The French didn't have many experienced commanders, and they didn't have many battle-hardened troops. There are, in fact, somewhat snarky comments among the diaries kept among the soldiers that when the French troops first come out on the frontier, they wear all kinds of, you know, feathery fashions and silly things which aren't appropriate for soldiers. And in a sense, French strengths and weaknesses are nicely illustrated by the way in which Cardinal Richelieu ultimately established himself on the Rhine in 1635. He simply bought the nearest army that was there, a mercenary army headed by Bernard of Weimar, which was purchased for about 1.6 million talers per annum.